and welcome to the Slow Home Podcast. This is the podcast all about slow living in a fast-paced world. My name is Brooke McCallery.
My name is Ben McCallery. Welcome to episode 6 of season 3. This episode correlates to the first episode of the season.
It really
does.
Do
you remember?
I do remember. Thank you for asking.
It correlates because they're both got to do with fashion.
They do.
It's a passion for fashion. I may have made that same joke in episode 1.
Chances are.
Moving on. Unlike episode 1, this conversation's with Emily Stokel.
Stokel, yes.
Stokel.
Emily Stokel. So if you're a thrifter, if you're interested in slow fashion, if you're interested in secondhand or vintage wear, you probably have heard of Emily.
Mm-hmm.
She hosts a podcast called the Pre-Loved Podcast, which, as the name suggests, is all about the art of secondhand fashion. And what I love...
It is an art, I've got to say.
It is an art.
Because I struggle.
It's an art that I'm very bad at.
We went to some of the most fantastic secondhand thrift shops ever in Harajuku in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
I lost my brain. It was amazing. I didn't buy a single thing.
And that's not because of me.
No, 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 not because of you. Okay, A, I felt intimidated almost.
Yeah.
B, I couldn't put things together.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like, I just can't put it together. Like, I don't buy for the sake of buying. But I struggle with putting outfits together. That sounds so weird.
No, it doesn't at all, actually. Emily and I talk about it in our conversation.
All right, good. I'm not alone.
It's really normal, particularly when you're first starting out, if you want to start shifting from buying new or fast fashion to thrift or secondhand or vintage, that transition can be really overwhelming because it's not like... Typically, anyway, not like you would go into a secondhand shop and things to be organized by, you know, color story or whatever. You kind of need to know, A, what you like, B, what looks good on you, C, what you've already got, and D,
what's your size.
Yeah, yes, exactly.
And E,
what gaps have you got in your wardrobe?
In your wardrobe. And F, you can't say, do you have this enlarged?
That's right. Well, you can, but chances are the answer will be no.
Yeah, it's a different kind of shopping.
It is a different kind of shopping, but it really is at its core all about slow fashion. And you can look at that in lots of different ways. I mean, it's slow because it's sustainable. I mean, all the resources that have gone into a secondhand piece, they've already been expended. So
it's
by shopping out of...
It's the best way to shop.
Well, I mean, Emily thinks so, and I tend to agree with her. I think that for heaps of reasons, you are allowed and you are allowing yourself to be more intentional, and you are also minimizing your personal carbon footprint by not choosing to shop on the high street, not choosing to shop, you know, online, impulse buying, all that sort of stuff. We do talk about the fact that just because it's thrift shopping doesn't mean it's impossible to overdo it.
Well,
you know, you really do need to go into a thrift store with a plan. If you're looking for something, have a list. If you're not sure whether or not you need that thing that's really beautiful, but is it actually necessary or is it something you will use, have a plan.
Mm.
You know, and Emily talks us through all of that. And on the whole, it's just a really fun conversation.
Yeah, good.
You know, we do talk about, we sort of dip into the conversation about new ethical fashion and why some of those ethical brands Emily is happy to support, but why... you know, what the things to look out for when the high street gets into, quote, ethical fashion before we applaud them all, you know. So we do talk about that. And I feel like even though it's not quite the end of season 3, it's a really nice bookend-ish.
With Katrina.
Yeah,
it
it's,
is.
It's lovely.
It is a nice bookend book. Slowyourhome.com/season3 for the show notes to this episode.
And
or you could actually go to...
You can head over to broomdaisy.com, which is Emily's website. Broom is B-R-U-M-E, daisy.com. And she's also Broom Daisy on Instagram.
Brum.
So I'm pretty sure I asked and I'm pretty sure it was Broom. But
okay, Brum.
Okay. Brummy. Brummy Daisy.
Time is running out. That's just, time is running. It's always running out. Do you agree?
I disagree.
Okay.
Yeah, I disagree, yes. If you're talking about the retreat, then yeah. I agree. But yeah, in general...
I'm specifically talking about slow beginnings. And apparently there's wolves in our backyard.
Yeah. Our dog's favourite game. And our kid's favourite game.
Is encouraging him to howl. Slow beginnings. It is going to be kicking off on the 6th or 8th of September.
8th of September.
Yeah, so 6th is the final day you can
join.
6th
of September. So if you're thinking about it,
you've got a week.
If you're listening to this the day it comes out, you have a week. So if you are keen to join, you want to know more, head over to slowyourhome.com/beginnings. And that is where you will find an outline of the retreat, what every week entails, and also where you will find details about when we start and how we begin. So 6th of September, you have until the 6th of September to join up. 8th of September, we kick off. And I absolutely cannot wait for you to join us. It's really going to be fantastic. I'm very excited, actually, to be able to work with people in such a close and sort of accountable way.
That's the thing. It's the accountability that this retreat is a little bit different to others.
It is. It is quite different to the last one that we ran, which had a much broader base of information. And what I've done this time is really narrow that down and catered it to people who are looking for this particular guidance at this particular stage in their journey, for want of a less cliched word.
Yeah.
You know, if you're at the beginning or if you found yourself sliding back towards where you were at the beginning, go over to the website, check it out. Get involved, and we'll see you in there.
We're looking forward to seeing you there. We are also looking forward to you enjoying this episode.
We are indeed.
We really are.
We are.
So enjoy.
Emily, hello. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining me. I am genuinely thrilled to be talking to you today because what we're going to talk about is not something I think I've ever really gone in deep on in a conversation on the podcast in the last 4 years. So I'm really excited to have you here.
Perfect. And I'm glad to be here. I'm such a fan of the show and I'm really excited to chat about slow fashion with you.
Awesome. And you know, I've got to admit, this is something, fashion in general is not something I'm very good at, but it's really not. It's something that I have to force myself to do. And when I do, I quite enjoy the thrill of the hunt, you know, of secondhand shopping. But the thing that keeps me going back is that it's one of the best things we can do to reduce our individual carbon footprint and to reduce the amount of clothes that end up in landfill. So let's just kind of dive in.
Yeah, that is completely right. I mean, the sustainability facts that are out there about fashion will absolutely just blow your mind. And I think the thing that sticks with me the most is just how quickly this has all gotten out of control. I mean, if you look back at what people were buying 15 years ago, even just 15 years ago, we're now buying like 60% more clothing and keeping it for half as long as we used to. So like things are coming in and out of our closet so much quicker than they used to. And that's not even thinking about, you know, if you think back to our great grandparents' days, for example, when they might only have just a handful of things in their closet that they kept for a long time and altered to fit them throughout the years and mended, like you were saying, to keep them treasured and in their closet. We're just talking within the last 15 years, this has really snowballed.
And that really does blow my mind because, I mean, when you hear about the amount of clothing that is either burnt or ends up in landfill, it's astonishing. The true cost is a great place to start if anyone is kind of just starting their exploration of this, this whole issue. But I kind of want to focus on your zone of genius, which is thrifting, because it is it's a proactive, positive change that everyone can make. And it's also something that allows us to still express ourselves, you know, in a creative kind of way. So have you always been interested in thrifting, or was there a shift that you went through?
Yeah. So I really got into thrifting when I was in college. And for me, it definitely started out as a budget thing. Thrifting was what I could afford. It was where I bought my first clothes for my first office job, you know, and it was just what I needed to do at that time in my life. But then it became something that I really, really loved. And I remember when my husband and I first met, like going thrifting together was one of our favorite things to do. And it still is. We love going thrifting together these days. But just like digging through stuff in the thrift store and like finding nostalgic things from childhood or finding like wild, funky pieces, like it's such a fun place to hang out and to discover things about yourself or discover things about someone else. And I just really fell for thrifting hard and fast. And so slowly, whatever came into my life new was not new, but just new to me. And really, it was that, like it was the fun of thrifting that got me before I really started to learn about how important it is. And like you said, you know, like so many people who are in this conscious fashion space, the true cost was huge for me. I think that came out in about 2015. And when I watched that, it just totally changed my relationship to fashion permanently. And I made the commitment that it was going to be secondhand for me from there on out. But I think what I still to this day like try to highlight when I talk about thrift is just how truly creative and original and fun it can be. And that's what I try to do with Preloved Podcast.
Which is your fantastic show where essentially you sit down and you chat with people who you'd love to go thrifting with. And I love the stories that you uncover and the motivations as well that each individual person has behind their reason for buying secondhand. You know, as you said, it can be for financial reasons. It's pretty frugal to shop secondhand, but also there's the environmental, you know, sustainability kind of impact that people are trying to reduce. There's the thrill of the hunt, you know, which is something that I do really love when I make time to spend.
Oh, it's so fun.
It's so fun. And we're furnishing our house at the moment too. And we have made a commitment to either go with things that are secondhand or handmade, hopefully locally handmade, and to find, you know, the perfect dining chairs online for $200 for 8 of them, as opposed to, you know, $200 a chair for a new chair, is such a thrill. And to go and pick it up and, you know, bring it into your house, there's something really fun about it.
Absolutely. And for years and years, you'll always be able to tell people where you got those chairs and how you sought them out and how you waited to find the perfect ones. And it just holds that meaning.
It does, in a way that if you bought something from, you know, an online store and it gets shipped and you just kind of put it into your house, for me, that sort of stuff doesn't have the same energy. And I know you talk about clothes particularly as having a soul or carrying around positive energy, which I love. And I actually fully subscribe to that idea because I think that pre-owned things really do come to you with energy attached to them.
Yeah.
And particularly when you've spent time looking for them and found this perfect thing, it sort of has this sunshiny feel around it that you get to wear every time you wear the item.
Absolutely. No, I love when a piece comes to me and there's some sort of story attached to it, or there's a memory of a trip where we found this special piece. But I think my favorite thing is when I find something and it's so clearly vintage, so clearly from another era. I really like 60s and 70s fashion. And if I get something that's several decades old and it just fits me perfectly, I just feel like myself in a former life had that piece and it like made its way back to me. And there's just something so special about finding something that is so perfect for you that I love about thrifting.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, it's sort of it thrifting and slow fashion and conscious consumerism to me are all sort of linked very closely. Is that something that you think about when you're thrifting? What do you see the link is between conscious consumerism and slow fashion and thrifting?
Definitely. Oh, they're so linked. I mean, like I said, I really became committed to this as more than just a passion or a hobby, like as a cause, after I saw The True Cost. And The True Cost shares some amazing information about the environmental impact that the fashion industry has, but really also the ethical damage and the harm to the people who are making our clothes, the harm to the communities that are making our clothes. And that really, really impacted me. That really sat on my heart to think that people are suffering to make our clothes. And I just don't want to contribute to that. And so I made this commitment that I only wanted to buy things that were already in our consumer world rather than have things made new, so that I would be reducing my impact and reducing that harm in any way I can. And a lot of the guests that I interview on the show, they have that same feeling about it. They love the style and they love the originality of the pieces that they're able to find secondhand or vintage. But really, there's something behind it for most of them as well. It could be a sustainability reason. It could be an ethical reason. You know, I've also talked to people who get started in it because they're passionate about animal rights and they don't want to contribute to new pieces being made from the leather industry or wool. And so people could have all these additional reasons behind it. And I think they are all linked together and all, you know, very important.
And I think they all really, what they require of us is slowing down and taking time to consider what our values are. Don't they? You know, that's sort of the thing that everything turns upon, figuring out what our values are and what we want our legacy to be, I guess.
Absolutely. And what impact we want to make in this world by where we put our dollars. You know, like they say, you're voting with your dollar each time you spend it on something. And so I don't want my contribution to go towards something that's harming people or harming the planet.
Yeah. And I think that that's a really helpful way of looking at it. You know, it essentially is your opportunity. When so many of us feel like we don't always have a say in how things happen, you know, at a higher level in our countries, but we do. We have a very direct say in the kind of country, the kind of world we want to see by what we support or what we don't support in terms of, you know, the stores that we shop in. What are your thoughts on, because I've noticed over the last few years, high street stores that have obviously noticed a growing concern amongst either their customers or people who used to be customers in ethical manufacturing, in slow fashion, in even just environmentally friendly fashion. I mean, do you have any thoughts on these companies jumping on the bandwagon? And I know you've committed to buying secondhand solely. But for people who are maybe looking to lessen their impact and they're seeing, oh, look, well, H&M has this eco arm of its brand now, or, you know, another high street kind of store is doing some sort of ethical shift. Do you think that that's a helpful thing to do? Or do you think that a lot of it is, you know, or manufacturers jumping on a bandwagon because they think they can make more money out of people that way?
Yeah, you know, unfortunately, there is just so much greenwashing out there. And as this has become an issue that's on more and more people's minds, I think you've seen, like you said, big brands do maybe what they'll call an ethical collection, where like a couple of pieces are produced in a different way. You know, I like to see that they're taking a step forward, but I think that they certainly could be doing a whole lot more. And I'm not really excited to support those companies, even if that one decision is a decision in the right direction. I know that they are so big that they have the power to make a real systematic difference, and they're choosing not to. They're choosing to do something that might just grab more consumer dollars.
Yeah.
And I don't love seeing that. I think it's wonderful, too, to support brands that are ethical brands that have been vetted as ethical brands. So if I can't find something secondhand, for example, say like maybe a pair of shoes or something like that, and I've done the hunt, I've know what I'm looking for, and I've been searching for it for quite a while, but I need something of shoes to wear to work or something like that. Then, you know, what I would do rather than turning to an ethical collection of one of those larger brands that I don't quite feel right about their ethics entirely, I would do some research into some ethical brands. And you can find ethical brands. I can give you a list of resources. There's great. Some great websites like Remake. The Good On You app will help you rate some of the values of different fashion brands. But just doing your research, because I think whenever we're talking about value systems, be it fair trade, be it ethical, be it sustainable, be it cruelty-free, you kind of know in your gut whether or not that thing is fitting your personal values criteria. Yeah. And so that is something that you have to decide for yourself where you're going to draw the line on ethical or not. But for me personally, that's how I draw that line.
And I think you just nailed it on the head. If you pay attention to that gut feel and don't allow the marketing departments of these companies to override that intuition or that understanding of your personal values, then you're able to take a step back and make like a real decision. You're not making an impulse purchase. You're not sort of shopping at 11 o'clock at night and thinking, oh, you know, sure, I could use this. Or, I think that really is taking the idea of conscious consumption to a whole new level. You're really being conscious in the decisions that you're making and basing them on your personal values and priorities.
Absolutely. I mean, the most conscious decision is to not buy anything at all. And so when it comes down to it, if it's not something that you need or if it's not something that makes you feel 100% confident that this aligns with my value system or I love this thing and I'm going to love it forever, I just know that, then the kind of the best decision is just to not buy at all.
And see, this is something that I think so many people struggle with because we've been trained over the past couple of decades to really value immediate gratification and to sit back and sort of say, well, I'm not going to, I'm going to wait, or this is not quite right, or this is not the thing that I feel like fits well inside my personal values. That takes practice. Do you have
it does.
Tips for people who are looking to slow down their consumption of clothing, whether they're thrifters or if they buy online a lot or if they find themselves shopping for leisure, to really just take a step back and get more conscious in those decisions?
Absolutely. Yeah. So these are some of my favorite tips for slowing down consumption. And this applies to fashion for sure, but then also just to like general consumption. So I think one of the biggest things is know what you need so that you don't get swayed by what you want. Yes. what I like to do for this is I have a note on my phone. And when I see something that I'm need, quote unquote, I put it in the list and I wait on it. I don't have a prescribed time period that I wait on it, but we're talking like more than a week or something.
Right.
Then I go back and revisit it and I make sure that that's really something that I still feel the same about when I'm looking at it later on. Now I've gone on a week more of my life without that thing. Was it really missing from my life? You know, just for example, with thrifting, I tend to have I love to go thrifting. And so that can get really out of hand if you're just like picking up everything that you love. Because I am not a seller at the moment. And so if I just let myself pick out everything I would love, it could get really out of hand. So when I apply that to thrifting, I like to kind of have in that notes on my phone, maybe like 3 to 5 things that I'm looking for that are holes that I'm trying to fill or things that I'd like to replace in my closet. And so then if I find something great in the thrift store, like it also has to meet the criteria that it was on my list that I thought of before I walked in there and got sucked up in all of it. So that's kind of how I treat knowing what you need. I also think this sounds silly, but like, it's important to know what you like, because I think especially sometimes with fashion, we can get so swayed by like what's trendy that we don't like think about our own personal taste and like what we like. And something that I like to do is just save pictures to collections on my Instagram. And so then I can like see these are the things that I'm gravitating towards style wise. So then I don't get distracted by things that are just like, this is trendy for a moment, or this is styled that certain way, or that looks good on that certain person. But I'm looking at, you know, okay, well, I must love a flower print because I have starred and hearted that 100 times over. So I know that that's true to my taste, and I don't need to chase the other thing. I think another really, really important thing is to look for high quality, and that can help you with if you walk into a thrift store and you get overwhelmed by just how much volume there is.
Yes.
Because especially here in the States, a lot of our thrift stores get filled up quickly with fast fashion junk.
Right.
You know, so way you can narrow it down is to just look for high quality pieces. So scan the rack and look for certain materials, look for certain brands. You're not going to find it every time. You're not going to find heaps and piles, but we're not looking for heaps and piles if we're talking about conscious consumerism. We're talking about like finding high quality things that are going to last us a long time. So I think those are some of my top tips that will help you like really edit down what you're bringing into your life.
Because I think, I mean, you're absolutely right. It can be really overwhelming, particularly if you're just beginning on your secondhand fashion journey, or if, you know, yeah, you find yourself in a new thrift shop that's bigger or less organized, or, you know, you don't know the layout, or you, even if you find yourself kind of shopping out of boredom, which I mean, is an issue, I think that has probably got the majority of us to the point where we are with fast fashion and, you know, owning so many more clothes. But I think that having a list of things either that you need, but also a list of things to look out for. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned looking for quality. If someone is new to this, what should they be looking for in terms of quality? I mean, are there particular fabrics, or are there things in a construction of a jacket or a skirt or a pair of pants that they should be looking for that kind of signifies that this is going to last?
Yeah, so when you're looking for materials that are going to last you a long time, an easy way to think about it is to look for more natural materials as opposed to man-made materials. So man-made materials would be a lot of the things that are filling our closets these days, spandex, rayon, mm-hmm. Acrylics, things like that. And these are really like made out of plastic, essentially plastics and chemicals. But we're looking for things that are more natural, things that are going to last us a long time and be easier to repair if we need to repair them. So some of those fabrics might be organic cotton, organic bamboo, tencel, which is a material made from cellulose, I believe.
Okay.
If your value system makes you feel comfortable shopping for wool, you could find a material like that. You could find linen, things like that that are made from natural systems are going to last you a lot, lot longer.
Okay.
Also, I generally think if you just want to like feel the item in your hand, like that will help you a lot. You know, if you're looking at the tag, that will definitely tell you what it's made out of. But if you feel the item in your hand and you can tell how it stretches, how it feels, if it's sturdy, if the seams look good, if it doesn't have any holes or cut corners, those are things that you can look for. You know, keep in mind, unfortunately, a lot of our clothes that are made these days, especially fast fashion pieces, are not made to last. And so a lot of those corners are cut. But if you are looking at a vintage piece, you know, that was maybe made to last someone such a long time and to be mended and fixed and altered. And so if you find a vintage piece and maybe the only thing wrong with it is a loose button or something, that piece perhaps could last you a lot longer than the piece that isn't made to last that came from a fast fashion store just a couple of years ago.
Well, I mean, I think, yeah, things are kind of, they're never designed for the trend to last either. So what would the point mm-hmm. be in, yeah. you know, creating pieces that will last beyond that? I mean, which just devastating to me to think about the resources that go into it, particularly when you're looking at the synthetics, because not only are they made of plastic essentially, but they're also putting plastic back into the water, you know, through the shedding of fibers and, you know, microplastics and things like that. But you mentioned mending, so replacing a button or fixing a seam or, you know, a hem or something like that. Is that, are they skills that you have developed over time as you've been, you know, you've gotten better and more involved in thrifting?
I wish. So I was quite spoiled in my upbringing that my grandma, my nanny, she was a professional seamstress. And so she could fix anything for me and make anything for me. I mean, she made dresses for me and she made dresses for my dolls and things like that. But anyway, she was so good that I didn't really learn. And she tried to teach me a few times, but let's just say wasn't the most patient with me learning. And so I didn't ever pick it up. And I wish that I had. I can do some very basic things these days, but I've actually found local to me a wonderful seamstress who is also really comfortable with vintage clothing. And she does a great job. And I will take pieces to her if, you know, for example, like I mentioned before, I love vintage dresses from the 60s or 70s. A lot of them have heavy metal zippers, and sometimes they break over time. And I could take a piece like that to her and she can fix it for me. And so I think it's great to have someone like that who can help you out to make your pieces last longer or do it yourself if you're more talented than me.
I was so glad to hear you say that, actually, because I mean, I love the idea of becoming adept at mending, but I have no skills whatsoever at this point.
No, and it's complex. I mean, it, you know, there's a lot to it. I'd love to learn. I should just sit down sometime and really, really practice it. But right now, my tip is find someone who is an expert.
Well, that then takes the pressure off as a shopper as well, finding something that is 100% perfect. Mm-hmm. You know, you could find something that fits you beautifully and has the fabric that you like, but the hem's too long, or it's got a missing button, or, you know, the zipper needs replacing. And I think so often if we don't have a little team of experts around us with, you know, in terms of the clothes
it's
that
so
we buy,
true.
We're really kind of stuck looking for the thing that is 100% perfect off the hanger, which doesn't happen all that often. So I think that's a really good piece of advice. Do you have actually any advice on how to find someone like that in your local area?
Yeah, I would say specifically if you're looking for someone who feels comfortable with vintage pieces, I would ask your local vintage store owner.
Okay.
That's how I got connected to my seamstress, because they probably take things to, if they don't mend or fix things up themselves, they probably take their things that they sell in the shop to someone. So that's
a really
who
good
I
tip.
Would ask.
Very good tip. Okay, now let's say someone's listening and they have decided that they really do want to start thrifting, but they have no idea where or how to begin. What's the first step for someone who is, you know, curious about getting started, but doesn't want to walk in and feel completely overwhelmed and sort of walk out again?
Yeah. So I think there's a couple of ways you can go about it. I mean, we are blessed these days that we're not just tied down to the thrift in our local area. We do also have the option of online mm-hmm. too. I think for either of those two options, a great way to start is knowing your measurements, because that can help you if you know your actual measurements of bust, waist, hip. That can help you when you're looking at pieces, because especially with secondhand, the tag could be missing or the size could not be equivalent to a modern day size. So knowing your measurement will help you be able to filter out pieces that aren't going to work for you. It's also super helpful online because it allows for you to search and filter down to pieces that are going to work for you. So I think that's huge. And then I think, like I mentioned, that I have that list that kind of stops me from going too hog wild in the thrift store. Mm-hmm. I think that you could use something like that to say, okay, you don't have to look through the entire store. Maybe I'm just going to look at dresses today, or maybe I'm just going to look at homewares, you know, or something I really know I love, and I'm not going to put pressure on myself to see everything. I'm not going to worry about what was left behind. I'm just going to go in, look at a couple of sections and see what I find.
Is there something that you could do as a beginner secondhand shopper to look at your wardrobe as it stands and perhaps pull out things that you know you love and you would like more of, or pull out the clothes that you wear most commonly and find things that will work in that, rather than sort of starting from scratch or just buying random pieces that don't actually work with the clothes that you already own?
Absolutely. I think that's such good slow fashion advice. It kind of combines like the idea of a capsule wardrobe, like, you know, taking a look at everything you own and figuring out what your true style is and what the holes are, if any. Mm. But also I think like what you kind of hit on there is that you should go about this process slowly. So there's no scrapping your entire wardrobe, pulling it all out and taking it to donate and then starting from scratch. Like, that is not what we want to do. We want to replace as we go along. We want to go about it, you know, like we want to go about everything in our lives with this like slow and intentional mindset, one step at a time.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, going back to the idea of conscious, you know, consumerism, it's really throughout the entire process, you really can be paying attention and really questioning everything that you buy or bring in. And on the flip side of that, I guess, is the idea of decluttering our wardrobes. It's something that most of us will do seasonally or at least semi-regularly. As someone who spends a lot of time in thrift stores, do you have advice on how to be a good clothing donator?
Yeah, this is really important. And I think that this is something that doesn't get talked about enough. I know especially, I guess it was this year that the year started off with the whole Marie Kondo craze, and yes, everyone was donating and the thrift stores were overwhelmed by the amount of inventory that they had to take in and process. And I think the stat, I may get this wrong, but I think the stat is that they're only really able to put out on the floor, like it's less than 20% yes, or so of the inventory that they take in. Okay, so that means that like it's on us to not treat the thrift store as our garbage bin when we're taking fast fashion pieces that aren't meant to last and we've worn them out and we don't want them anymore to those places. So I think there are a couple of things that you can do. I think when you are picking out what you're going to donate, really be intentional about it and think of things that are actually a worthwhile donation, things that are quality, things that the thrift store can reasonably resell on. So nothing that has holes or damage, things that are more recognizable or more valuable brands. Those are the types of things that you might set aside for the thrift store. I think there are other things that you can do as well to just kind of take some of the load off the thrift store. So you could consider clothing swaps with your friends. Yeah. So you could get together a group of friends, or actually my local vintage store has organized a few clothing swaps where they'll just get tons of people together from the community to swap clothes. So then everything is going back into the hands of someone else in the group who wants something new and fun, and no one has to do the processing and the labor there. So that's a really fun thing. There are clothing recycling options as well, especially if you're looking at some of those more natural fibers like I was talking about. There can be options, especially in bigger cities, for recycling that those raw materials. So that might be something to look into as well if you have something that is a more quality fabric, but it doesn't fit you anymore, say, or it is too far gone to be mended or something like that. The move there would be to actually try to recycle it in some way, right, rather than donate it and put the burden on recycling it or disposing of it on the thrift store. So I think that's the biggest thing, is just not treating your donations as I think some people think of it as they're just getting rid of it and it's out of their hands.
It's going away. You know, giving it away or throwing it away.
Yeah.
I mean, there is away.
It's giving it away, but we're thinking about it more as throwing it
exactly,
away.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. And I think we forget often that there is no such thing as away. Someone mm-hmm. has to choose what to do with that piece of fabric that is no longer usable as a item of clothing. You know, that's going to be someone's burden. And I think it's so unfair that in what is a, you know, essentially a throwaway culture that we sort of just tend to, we don't worry about it if we don't see it anymore.
Yeah.
And that's why so much ends up in landfill. And, but also I think it's tied to our sense of doing the right thing.
Totally is. And I'm not trying to tell people that they shouldn't donate to their local thrift or charity shops because they do amazing work, but they could be more intentional about the things that they take there. And so when you're doing that closet clean out, maybe have a couple of different piles. What's going to the thrift store? What's going to clothing swaps? What just needs to be recycled? Another option really could be resell for you too, depending on your style. So I really love vintage things. Like I have a little bit more funky bohemian style. And if I think something is maybe a little more out there than my local Goodwill might be able to resell that on quickly or conveniently, maybe I'll try to sell that to a vintage seller who caters to that client or that look, just because I know that they have maybe more opportunity to put it in the hands of someone who will love it. So thinking about like four piles rather than just one big trash bag going to the thrift store to take care of.
Exactly. And I mean, look, and I think the reality is if we feel uncomfortable at the level of stuff or the quality of stuff that we're getting rid of out of our wardrobe, that is a really good sign that we need to change our habits. You know, there it may be that this time when you're doing your clean out, there's going to be items of clothing that are beyond repair. Erin Rhodes from The Rogue Ginger talks about all these really cool different ways of reusing completely unusable pieces of clothing. You know, you can make
there's
a dog
some
bed
great upcycling resources out there.
You use it as you know, cleaning rags and things like that. So at least you extend the life of this stuff. But if at the end of the day you need to dispose of some of those clothes, like that is the line in the sand. That is going to be the last time that that happens. And you use that sense of guilt or heaviness or sadness or, you know, whatever it feels like to you as your motivation to start making the changes that we've been talking about today.
Definitely.
Yeah, I think we need to tap into that little voice, that pang that sometimes we get when we know we're not kind of operating within our values.
Absolutely. And it's those moments like that when you're doing the clean out that's going to naturally come to you. But yeah, like you said, say this time's the last time that we're going to be doing this.
And then you get the fun of becoming someone who goes thrifting.
Yeah.
And you get to have a really cool, fun wardrobe, which you have, by the way. I was looking through your Instagram. You have just such fun, joyful clothes. And I think it's wonderful.
Thank you. I love a bit of color and pattern.
you do. Can I ask a question before we finish, though?
Sure.
I also know there's a lot of people listening who perhaps have already adopted secondhand shopping, slow fashion for themselves, would like to do so for maybe a partner or the kids or as gifts. Do you have any tips on how to secondhand shop for someone else?
That's a good one. So I think something that's really fun is to like expose new people to secondhand shopping. Like I love getting them hooked on this that I love too.
Yeah.
And that's really like part of the fun of the podcast because I try to treat secondhand shopping there. Like I say that it's supposed to be as like fun as reading a fashion magazine, that this is exciting. This is fun. This is something really cool to try. And so I love taking like new people thrifting with me because I just think that it's so fun to see their eyes light up. And sometimes it can be helpful to have a guide the first couple of times you're working your way through it. But I think giving secondhand gifts is always a good way to start. It's a great way to be a little bit more conscious about what you're consuming and during gift giving season. Mm. And you know, if you were able to give something really special that you hand selected for that person, and say it's a vintage piece or a vintage homeware, that might be the only one of that piece, and you saw it and it made you think of them and it meant so much to you. And so maybe you give them that piece with a little note about where you found it and why it made you think of them and why you picked it for them. And that's going to mean a lot to them, I think. And then maybe that will start to get into their heart that secondhand is something that they want to try themselves.
Yeah, that's really fun. That's a really nice way of kind of spreading the love.
I'm always about the positive ways of spreading the message. Like, I want it to be fun, exciting, warm. I just think that that's the way to get people to love it too.
I think you're absolutely right. I mean, we were talking before we hit record that presenting people with the positive, with the optimistic, with the exciting side of, you know, a solution to what is a growing problem is the best way to activate people to join you. You know, we can tell them about, we can watch the documentaries, we can understand the scary statistics, and we need to understand that there is an issue there. But I think presenting them with a solution that is fun and proactive and exciting, and, you know, like you said, it's like walking through a fashion magazine. That's a lot more alluring to people than kind of just telling them that everything's broken and that we should feel bad, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah. And I think you're doing a really good job of spreading that, that love and that message. Emily, thank you so much for your time. I don't know if you could hear me. I've been taking notes as you've been talking because you've had so many just really helpful pieces of information on how to make this a change, but a lasting change as well. And also make it a fun thing that we get to do with people.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate getting to chat with you and you offering your platform to me. And yeah, I hope that people are excited to get out there and try secondhand shopping.
Absolutely. Now, links to all of your Instagram and your website, Broom and Daisy, are over on slowyourhome.com/season3. And I encourage everyone to check out your podcast as well, which is absolutely wonderful. It's just full of people like you, just shiny, happy people who have adopted secondhand shopping. Thank you, Emily.
Who is that? Hi, Puck Pass.